Hello and welcome to the 2019 Money Mindset Summit. I'm your host, Jen Sincerac, and today is day three, and we have a fantastic speaker and topic for you today. And our speaker yesterday pretty much teed us up perfectly for this topic, which is, are you ready for your windfall? And if you remember in our interview yesterday with Nancy, she was talking about, well, what happens with emotional regulation, even if it has nothing to do with your doing your personal work, but just an event happens in your life around money, like say you come into a lot of money, and if you're not emotionally prepared and ready for it, what happens then with the money? Well, we see that in stats all the time. So this is what we are doing a deep dive in with our interview today. Now, I want to say, having just edited this interview, that if the idea of managing money, having more comfort with money, makes you want to A, run out of the room, or B, fall asleep, those to me sound like they could be some triggers. So you might want to just start tapping now, pick a handful of points, and just gently tap, tap, and breathe through the whole interview, and just see how it is for you, because she asked some really interesting questions in her exercise at the end of the interview. But the gist of this whole interview is that feeling comfortable with money, doesn't matter how much or how little you have, that is the way to attract more into your life rather than treating it like it's an allergy. So managing money wisely, it happens wherever you are monetarily in your life, whether you are on social assistance or whether you are making eight figures a year. So just keep that in mind as you tap and listen to this really super fun interview with Calista Chahal. We invented money thousands of years ago, and along the way, we've infused it with biases, beliefs, and stories. But neuroscience shows us that biases and beliefs can be changed, that stories can be rewritten. And that's what this summit is all about. Let's change those habitual money brain patterns so we can have a newer, safer, and more positive relationship with money, where we can earn more, consciously enjoy more, and change the world more. Please note that by listening to this summit, you are agreeing to the terms listed at moneymindsetsummit.com. And please check out how to care for yourself during this summit at moneymindsetsummit.com/care. Calista Chahal has been in the field of adult education since the 1990s. She holds a degree in psychology, a certificate in leadership, and is currently working on her master's in adult education and personal growth. She is very versed in the study and topic of money from multiple angles. She's written several academic papers on the topic and is currently writing two books related to the topic of money. Welcome, Calista. Thank you so much for joining us on the summit this year. I'm really excited to dive into our topic today.
Thanks, Jen. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Okay, so we've already mentioned the topic, but I just want to say it again, which is, are you ready for your windfall? Which I just love that so much, because boy, is there ever so much information underneath of that. So can you tell us a little bit what that title is about? And then I'll get into some more questions.
Well, the thing for me is that we have these windfalls in life, and it may be a small windfall. We find $50 on the street, or maybe something larger like a Christmas bonus of $2,000 or something, but they disappear. And then when those big windfalls come along, whether it's a lottery winner, inheritance, an insurance settlement, they also disappear quickly because we don't think about how to manage the money that we have. So often the money comes to us and we end up with a flat tire that we didn't anticipate, or car problems, or the dog gets sick. And so the money disappears really, really fast because we're not thinking about how do we manage the money that we have. So as much as I love my fellow EFT practitioners, there's a lot of tapping for more income and tapping for more income and raising the money ceiling, which is all really good. But we don't always look at how do we take care of the money we have so that when more comes along, we know how to manage it and then leverage it to the best possible use.
You know, it's funny you say that, because Brad Yates, who's also in this summit, he talks about that, his own personal experience, which everyone will get to hear as well, about how it's not just about having the money, but then Now I have the money. What's the next set of blocks comes around? How do I keep the money? How do I manage the money? So I'm glad you brought that up. Now, you said a host of examples there of ways that windfalls come. Can you list off a few more? Is there any that we're missing?
If you sell a business, or you end up with a product, it could be another one. patents, books, those kinds of things come along. I think it covered insurance settlements, and that could be something like a car accident, which you get $25,000. That could be life insurance from your spouse or something. I think inheritance is a big one that we don't always think about because we don't, and a lot of times we don't know how much we're going to inherit. So we know mom and dad have a house, and we know that between me and our three siblings, okay, I get a third of the pie or something. And sometimes we don't realize that mom and dad actually have $1 million in the bank because they've been prudent, right? And all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this money? And professional sports players, they are notorious for this as much as lottery winners, where they end up bankrupt, you know, 4 or 5 years after retiring. Like 80% of football players, 60% of baseball players. This is a huge contingent of people where they have this great seven-figure salary for a few years, and they create this wonderful lifestyle. Lottery winners, I'm sure you've heard the cliche too, and it's gone very quickly. You know, this one woman in one of the books I was reading was talking about, she was, after her husband was killed in the 9/11 attacks in New York City, mm-hmm. that everybody knows about. I mean, she got several million dollars worth of insurance settlements and stuff. But it's spending the money was like, it's like that retail therapy. It's like a placebo. You can't ever get your husband back, but we end up grieving, right? Whoever we've just lost or whatever the issue is. And it's gone. And when people think, how do you spend $1 million in a year? Right? But it just disappears. And we give it away. It's almost like we're allergic to money sometimes. So it's like as soon as we get it, we have to, you know, pass it on. Can we, you know, give it away? Oh, no, I don't want it. You know, and we give it to charities. We give it to our friends. We spend money on really nice things, which then costs more to maintain because that more expensive car costs, you know, more for tires and brakes when those the maintenance things comes around. The more expensive house costs more for property insurance and heating bills. And so we end up losing that money very quickly.
Okay, so there are so many different points there we could discuss. And yes. I feel like, you know, it just what you've said in the last 2 minutes alone could be just an entire topic and episode in and of itself. But there are a handful of things that you said that I thought was really interesting. One, you were talking about, you know, fellow EFT practitioners and how a lot of service individuals, I would say in general, have these big hearts.
Yes.
And it doesn't always come along with wanting to have the money and keep the money and do well with the money. And there are a bunch of different blocks that already come up for me that I can see around that. But then when I was thinking about you having said that, you've mentioned before that we talk a lot about the self-help principle of acting as if and how that can hurt us. Do you mind getting into that a little bit? Because I know that's kind of, it's a big theme for anyone who does self-help work.
Well, one of the challenges of acting as if is that we start to act like the millionaire, or we act like the person who has a six-figure income, because we are trying to hold that space of what we're creating. And I've been caught in this trap as well, where I'm starting to start thinking like that person. So I start spending like I have that income, but I don't have the income yet. And before I know it, I've got credit card debt, you know, on the rise or something. So the thing that we miss is that we want to act not just as much as we have the income, but that we have that maintenance, so that we don't just have the money flowing through us and going past us like a big wind, but that we're harnessing it for our power, harnessing it for to really leverage us. There's this great book, it's out 20 years ago or so, called The Millionaire Next Door. And what a lot of people don't realize is that those millionaires become millionaires because they're spending less than they're earning. And not just 2% or 5% less, but 10 or 15 or 20% less than what they're earning. And so it's that money, managing the money we have, having a strong relationship to our money. And that means being aware of how much money we have in our wallet, maybe not to the penny, but approximately. Same with our bank accounts, to be aware of what we're doing, opening those bank account statements or bills or whatever it is on a regular basis, to be connected to our money.
Okay, so, again, I already hear more and more blocks coming yes. up in my head as you're saying this. So can you list what you have seen just in that I should know what's in my bank account. I should know what's in my wallet. I should know what's in my investments if you have them. I should know how much debt I have if you have debt.
Well, and I have a client right now. Her homework this week is to open up her filing cabinet. She has got all of her debt, nice and neatly filed into nice folders, but she doesn't know what's written on the paper. Now, I also know somebody who has some money invested for her retirement, and it's great because she's got it tucked away for the future, but she's told her financial advisor she does not want the annual statements. So for 5-10 years, she has not received any statements on her finances. Now, this relative who's handling her finances for her is a professional, and we hope he's doing a good job, but she's not looking at her statements. She has no idea what her finances are like. And it's very easy to have those money blinders where we don't want to look at what's happening with our finances and to be aware, you know, or a lot of times we trust our spouses. And so our spouse handles the bills for us. It does what they do, you know, and many people, more so women than men, because historically men have been the ones managing the family finances. You know, the spouse dies and they have no idea how to write a check. They don't know where the checkbook is. They have no idea what the finances are, whether they're good or bad or indifferent, or who the financial advisors are. And people end up stuck. And yes, there's a lot of blocks around money, you know, management. A lot to tap on. We can do this for, you know, the next week solid.
So when you're talking about money blinders, can you tell me a little bit about what do we think the emotional blocks are that are creating those blinders?
Well, part of it is we have this taboo about talking about money. So we don't want to talk about it. We have this notion around, I don't deserve money. I'm afraid of money. There is this notion around, if I know, what does that mean? Does that make me greedy if I want money? People get, it's almost like allergic to math, because we struggled with math because we had the wrong math teacher back in high school or elementary school, because our math teacher in elementary school had issues with math because they didn't, you know, and so we've absorbed these issues. So math may not be our strong suit. So we think that, oh, if I look into, you know, my paperwork, I have to do math, and then we shut down instead of realizing that, you know what, I can tap through this. I can tap through my issues with calculations and formulas, and I can start to do the math to know exactly where I stand. How much am I paying for interest? How much am I earning on my investments? You know, is there a better way? And to really take that on.
Absolutely. Okay. That feels really, really good. And I feel like we could jump into tapping there, but not yet, not yet. Still more good things to talk about. How do we start getting comfortable with becoming friends with our money and getting to know it better and looking at these things?
Well, part of it's just reading about money. You know, when I read a magazine on financial, whether it's a blog or an article or a PDF or audiobook, I tap while I'm listening to the audiobook. So that, because I know there's going to be stuff coming up going, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, and I know I'm going to be anxious about whatever's going on, but I just tap as I'm reading through that magazine article on whatever money issue is. And that's one of those things where to be able to start learning, education is so, so, so important. We can't learn enough. Knowledge is power. And when we learn more about money management, and that starts with our first $500 we can have to say what type of investment we want to put that into, you know, whether it's a special deposit, you know, guaranteed deposit instrument, or whether it's just putting into a high interest savings account. When we start to know what can be done with it, we can start making wise choices. And that's the important thing, is to educate yourself and to be able to educate to understand what the sales reps, whether it's a bank or a financial advisor, what's in it for them, so that when you understand what's in it for them, you can start making choices based on what's good for both of you, not just what's best for them. So it might be taking a different vehicle, which gives them less fees, but leverages you or fits your comfort level. Managing money is all about comfort level. And as a society, we're not financially literate. As we become financially literate, our comfort level increases. And I'm not saying don't pay the advisors, but know what you're getting for that advice. If you're paying 1% or 2% of the portfolio to the advisor, are they doing their job? Are they giving you advice? Are they going to call you when the market's turning to say, you know what, it's time to move to cash? It's being aware of when you know what's important to you, and this is part of it, is what's your style of investing? Maybe you don't want to be in stocks. Maybe you want to be in something conservative. Maybe you want to sit there and say, you know what? I'm going to invest in real estate. if you have an extra $50,000, you may want to invest in real estate and not invest it in the stock market. But a financial advisor isn't likely to say, go put your money into real estate because they don't make any money.
So something you said that stood out to me earlier was about when you're becoming knowledgeable about this. So for everyone who's listening, if you're not tapping already, and some of this is starting to feel like I'm not there yet, I'm not super interested in this, now's the time to tap. Just tap. You don't have to become an investment expert overnight at all. But I love that you said, look, I'm reading an article or something and you've studied this and written papers on it and you love it. And yet still you're tapping when you're reading an article on something that has a new investment strategy or a new term that maybe you hadn't heard of before. So we can all just keep regulating ourselves to feel safer, which is why I wanted to head into this bit about feeling safe around money. And you and I have talked before about psychological safety around the blocks that we have to do with money. So can you speak a bit about that?
Sure. So psychological safety is that aspect where when we are avoiding the truth, it's often because we have this psychological safety that kicks in. So we are dealing with fear or guilt or shame or some sense of inadequacy. I don't know how. I can't do this. This is hard. I don't have the alphabet soup behind my name. So we end up with some notion that says, ugh, all right, and we shut down. We don't want to look at the truth. We don't want to look at the truth of our debt. We don't want to look at the, oh my gosh, how much am I paying on my interest on my credit card? We don't want to look at how much we just spent. You know, it's like, it's that aspect of, honey, I just bought a new dress, but you cut the tag off before your husband asks, you know, how much did that dress cost? Those kinds of things. We don't want the truth. All of that psychological safety is the pacifier to say, I don't want to know the truth because it's uncomfortable. And I appreciate that. I've had my challenges. I've had debt issues. I've had issues earning money. I speak from a voice of experience. But the challenge is how do we work through that? And that's why I love tapping so much, because you can take it with you. It's there all the time. Yes, turn to whether it's a group class or individual coach to work on specific issues, but you can just take that edge off those issues just by tapping wherever you're at, whether you're standing in line at the bank, whether you are reading that article, whether you are talking to somebody on the subway, you know, in the middle of a haircut, and they start talking about the markets going down, just start tapping. And you can just start taking that edge off instead of hiding and avoiding knowing what's happening.
Yeah, if we know that tapping is helping to downregulate the emotional centers of our body, like decrease the stimulation there, then if you're feeling stimulated and it doesn't feel good and you have a little fear or discomfort, then that's an easy way to just tap, not mindlessly, but kind of in the background where you're not trying to dive into a deep, dark issue per se while you're at the salon hearing about someone talk about the market crashing, but you're just able to regulate yourself in the moment.
And that's what's important. Say, in this moment, I don't have to figure it all out today. I don't have to figure it out, you know, in the next week, but I can learn one thing every week. I can take 5 minutes every week to read one little article. And then in a year's time, we've put in 20 hours or whatever. And that's the piece, is to take those baby steps to become stronger.
And it's interesting because we all have something or probably many things that we are amazing at in our lives. Like, it's so natural to us. It feels like, what do you mean? This is special. Doesn't everyone just feel this way or think this way or know these things or act like this? Because it's very natural for you. I have a friend who's a financial planner, so I feel the same way as you do. Like, a lot of financial planners do a good job. And he was really like, is this the career for me or not? And then his favorite people to help out were particularly women who were older, who'd lost their husbands in like the winter of their lives. Yep. And they, for whatever reason, just hadn't gotten into the finances and they were really concerned about something. And he was able to go in and do what felt like very simple math to say, oh no, look, we just shift these things around and you're fine. See here, look, you're fine. And then the relief and the gratitude and the peace that he could see that they had just from him doing this very simple thing was so rewarding. So just like we all have things in our life that we happen to be very good at that someone else might be shaking in their boots when they had to approach, you can get there. And just like Calista's saying, 5 minutes a week even, 5 minutes a week of just tapping if you're triggered, yeah. and learning a little bit more, or even if it's just looking at where you are financially right now. You know, you can't type in something to your phone, a GPS, to get from one place to the other if you don't have the place you're at, right? So you have to sort of know what your financial picture is. Where on the map are you right now so that you can get to, there are many different routes, but that's so you can get to point B.
And the other thing too is it is simple. It's little by little. It's not about taking it all in one day, one swoop. And this is the downside of people such as the financial windfall winners with the big lotteries and the big insurance settlements, is that they've not been doing the preparation work along the way. So they are overwhelmed. They've never had to think about. They have their job. They pay their bills. It's very money in, money out. And all of a sudden, oops, like, oh, it's so much to learn. They're inundated with the overwhelm. And this happens with company bonuses. We don't want to ask for the raise because then we have to figure out what to do with our extra money, whatever that is. And a lot of times for these professional sports players, no one's sitting there holding their hand saying, okay, now that you're making this much money, how do we leverage this so that it's there for you in the future? Because you're not likely to be earning $1 million once you throw out your shoulder in 2 years and you're now on the bench. So it's keeping it simple. It doesn't have to happen overnight. If you do have a big windfall, put it in the bank and ignore it for a year. Just get comfortable with it. You don't have to invest it right away. You don't have to spend it on a bigger house right away. Just sit there and go, oh, look, I have this winning. I have this inheritance. I have this insurance settlement. Okay. And take a year and figure it out. Take 2 years if you need to. And be comfortable. Take it at your pace, whatever that pace is.
So this brings up a question I have for you. With, I know that in Canada, this is done. I'm not sure about in the US or in other countries around the world. But I know that if you have a big windfall, that they actually sit you down and give you some counseling when you come to collect your money. So like they'll sit you down and say, you need to have a shopping spree, get it out of your system, buy like the car or the, depending on how much money it is, right. You know, get it out of your system, do the thing. But then they also give you tips on like, look, it's likely that people are going to reach out with you. So you need to do things like change your number, et cetera. So if someone has a big windfall, and I totally agree with you, like give yourself some time to catch up. If you're not there and ready for it and planned for it, how do you give yourself some time to catch up, especially if a lot of other people might be not swooping in, but are aware of it and there might be pressure around you?
Find a way that works for you. There's this one story where this man won the lottery and he has 52 weeks before he needed to cash in on a ticket.
Right.
He waited 51 weeks. So he had a year psychologically knowing he had the winning ticket in his hand before he told anybody that, and even before he told the lottery company that he had won. So he had a chance to talk to a financial advisor. He had a chance to talk to his accountant and sort out these types of things to think about. So when he went to cash in the ticket, he already had his plane ticket booked. So he was gone on a vacation for 2-3 weeks, whatever it is. So he could not be in town when it hit the news and all of that rah-rah was there. The phones were ringing and he was gone. Right. And then he could come back a month later when the dust had settled and go through. So that's one way. Yes. Take your 10% and go have your play day, you know, with a new outfit, fancy dinner and feel like, yes, you've enjoyed something. But also be aware of when you have that inheritance, they're not necessarily going to be sitting there counseling you. When you have that company Christmas bonus of $5,000 or something, no one's necessarily going to say to you, oh, what do we do with an extra $5,000? So it's a matter of, okay, let me spend $500 on a nice weekend away or something, and then let me re-strategize for what can I do with this money. It's just taking the time, talking to people who you trust, being aware of what it is. And if you think you might be coming into some money because your parents are aging or you know, the car accident or something, be aware. If you're grieving because of a loss of someone loved, know that you don't have to figure this out. Give yourself time to grieve. Yes, mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, whoever wanted you to have this money, whatever it is. But you don't have to spend it today. Just go slow. Take your time. It can sit in the bank. Cash the check, it'll sit in the bank. There's nothing wrong with it sitting in the bank, just earning a little bit of interest. You're not going to lose it that way. You know, even in the stock market, you know, if it's not in the market, you're not going to lose it. It's not going to be a bad decision if it's just sitting there. Even if you want to wait 2 months before you cash the check, even if you want to say to the person who you're inheriting the money from, the executor of the estate, saying, you know what, do you mind if we wait 3 months before you give me my money? I would like to chat with a financial advisor. I would like time to interview financial advisors. I would like time to consult my accountant about this. Is it better for me to receive that inheritance before or after the next tax year rolls around or something? You know, to be aware of, oh, do I want this $30,000 to build my business now? It's a great opportunity. Do I have my business plan in place to then execute on this so it leverages me up? And tap on, oh, I feel like I have to do something with it today. You know, even before we take the charities, and this is where it's a tappable issue, just, you know, it's okay to say no. Tapping for patience with yourself.
I love that. Because just when things start to feel like, whoa, I could see how that would be so overwhelming. And then comes in the, it's okay, you can tap with it. And just tap for the patience. That just feels so good. I hope everyone in the audience, if you're feeling a little bit tense and then you're tapping and then Calista brings in the, but it's okay, you can give yourself the time you need. You don't have to know it overnight, that you feel the calmness as well. I wanted to bring up a story as well, because you were talking about that winner who he had 52 weeks to claim it, claimed it at 51 weeks. Years ago, I think I was living in Toronto, flipping through the paper on the subway. There was a man who had won also, but he waited 3 months to claim. And I remember the people commenting saying, I can't believe, or the person who wrote the article saying, I can't believe this person waited so long and that sounds so crazy. But I thought, like, well, good on him. It's just 3 months. You know, you've been living your whole life without this extra money. Can't remember what the amount was. What's an extra 3 months? And that's exactly what he did, is he just contacted a financial advisor, figured out what did he want to do with the money. And then so it all had a place and a home, somewhere to go when he did get the money in the first place. And I think that's such a great idea, because then if you do want to share the money or invest the money or buy things with the money, like, you have the chance to sort of fantasize about it or see how it will all work out in a calm way without the pressure from anyone on the outside at the same time.
It's very easy to make quick decisions and then end up in trouble because you quit your job. But $100,000 disappears fast, right? $1 million disappears very fast. So it's really easy to not be thinking through things and to go, oh, how do I prepare for this? This is a whole other topic for another day, but just one of the challenges with inheritances is that most parents do not pre-warn the children that money is coming or educate the children to be financially savvy. And parents are not educating the children to be financially literate on any topic, because the parents don't know enough. And those few parents that do have the money tend to hush, hush, let's not talk about it. And then the children are not prepared. But yes, take your time. There's no rush with this. You're not going to lose it if it's not being spent. Take your time before you quit your job. What are you going to do with that spare time? Yes, we all want to travel the world. But when we get back from traveling the world, then what? Warren Buffett still goes to work. He's 80 years old. He doesn't have to go to work anymore. He can retire, but he enjoys the activity of what he's doing. So this is where, oh, maybe I want to take that money and upgrade my skills and transition into a different job or a more fulfilling job or something. It's being aware of, don't quit your job overnight. Don't do rash decisions. Live your life exactly the same way as you have been for the past 6 months, whatever it is. Yes, pay off the debt if you've got credit card debt, particularly credit card debt, and just give yourself 6 months, a year, whatever it is, to think it through.
You know, there's a parent at my daughter's gymnastics group, and we were talking about lottery winnings, et cetera. And he was saying one of his good friends was part of a group that won, I can't remember how much, let's say it was $50 million or $25 million. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he got $5 or $10 million from it, but he didn't quit his job. He still went to work, did his thing. And he was like, no, I'm going to see this through. I mean, I'll get to retire earlier, et cetera. But most of the other people who won in this group quit, but he was like, no, he was one of the two or something who didn't quit. Makes me think a little bit of that fun TV series Ballers. where Dwayne Johnson plays a financial advisor. Like, he was a football player and now he plays a financial advisor to football players so they don't lose their money. But that aside, you brought up the idea of parents not letting their kids know what their inheritance might be, but also that the kids weren't educated in the first place. And as a mom, what I'm seeing with my kids right now, there's not a ton of education happening. So do you have thoughts on ways that we can help our kids become more familiar with money and feel comfortable around money? Because, you know, it's such a big issue. We talk all the time in this summit about blocks that you might have from the way your parents spoke about money. But then not talking to your kids about money also creates blocks, which I've seen in some people I've worked with. So what are your thoughts on this?
One, clear your own blocks so you can then clear your, you cannot pass those on, those blocks onto your children.
Beautiful.
When my son was five, he had an allowance. And you think, why does a five-year-old need an allowance? Because I wanted him to have the experience of dealing with money. So when he, back in those days, we paid for our bus tickets. And we had a car, but from time to time, we'd be on the public bus because it was easier to get downtown. And he'd be there buying his bus tickets because I wanted him to be aware of how he was relating to money and how he needed money to do what he needed to do. When he had a birthday party to go to for one of his friends from preschool or grade one, grade two, grade three, he had the responsibility of paying for that gift. So he had to save his money, $5 every week. And then once a month, we'd be spending $10, $15, whatever, on that gift for that birthday party. So he was using money for him, had an allowance, and then in the age of six, $6, age of seven, $7, working our way up. So when a set of bus tickets ended up in his stocking for Christmas, he could appreciate what it was. There's these little things where use money. Even if I was spending the item and using my money to spend the item, I had my son work with the cashier. The other thing too is use cash. We spend 23% more with credit cards than by using cash. So put your children in the habit of using cash so that they count out $20, count out $10 for their purchase, as opposed to tap, tap, tap. Have your children see you counting the money out in cash. So, because children have this notion, it's just an automatic bank machine. There's just more in the machine. Well, they don't think about how the money gets into the machine. So when you see them counting out the dollars with the cashier, whatever it is, then be aware of that. If you are buying presents for, grandma's birthday or something, bring the child into the act. So it's including the children in the conversation around money. And you can sit there, and if you're planning your family vacation or which restaurant to go to, have them do the transaction. Have them sit there at the restaurant and go, okay, how much for tip? How much do we have to leave for the waiter or the waitress? And there's so many little things we can do to just include our children in the conversation based on the appropriate age. When they reach teenage years, we can talk about babysitting, cutting the neighbor's grass, those kinds of things for expenditures, making choices around, okay, I'm going to give you a budget. Now you have to figure out what clothing you want to buy for back to school, and they have to choose. Right? Yes, you may buy something for a child, their first phone or something, say, okay, if this breaks, you're responsible for the replacement. I have friends, they have a teenager, they have that whole conversation, this much goes to your charity from your allowance, this much is for you to choose to spend. This is what you have to think about for long-term savings. Start your children early. But yes, you can talk about money management at whatever level they're at. A friend of mine in my investment club, she brought her university-age granddaughter to meet with her investment advisor. Not necessarily to discuss the dollar values, but to say, hey, let's talk about stocks, the pros and cons of the stock market. So she's 20 years old. She's got her first $2,000. She's bought three stocks. Start it wherever you're at, but start.
I like that. There's many ways that you can do it, like just including the kids in day-to-day financial interactions and seeing it happen in a healthy way. And I love, first and foremost, tap with your own stuff, which brings me back to the point I wanted to make earlier that, last year we had Sarah Newcomb in the summit, and she was talking about how she did her first degree in math and still wasn't great with money. And then she went back and got a master's degree in financial planning because she thought, if I just understood all of this better, then I would be great with money. And then it was inside of that where she had a class with James Grubman where she realized, wait a minute, this is all about emotions and psychology. Like,
yeah.
I have I have a narrative that I've been telling myself about what money means, etc. And this is what's bothering me. So for everyone who's listening to this, like the whole base of this talk is that if you can regulate yourself around this, then you can educate yourself. You can take the steps to learn along the way. Like when I was a kid, I remember hearing my older siblings talk about university and how crazy hard it was going to be. And I was thinking, well, you know, I was in the seventh grade or sixth grade at the time, but I remember thinking, well, it'll be fine by the time I get there. I don't have to go there tomorrow. I'll have all the stages right in between, and then I'll just be prepared by the time I get there. And then I went to medical school. Like I just went on and on. So you don't have to be like doing complicated investment right now. Just you work on you. Well, we're now going to work on some issues and through this whole summit. And then, okay, I feel like I can dip my toe in the water this far, or I feel like the next time we go out to dinner, I can include my kid in the tip. That feels okay. Don't want to give them allowance, but this is a way that you can do it. So just like Calista's saying, start with where you are, what feels comfortable, regulate yourself. And then when you feel regulated enough, you can take that tiny little action. And then the next tiny little action, because those 5 hours a week or 2 minutes a week even, it does add up by the end of 10 years and you will have known more.
There's so much you can do. I'm thinking of the old-fashioned Monopoly game. Oh, I remember playing that with my son, and we would modify the rules based on how old he was at the time. You know, there's a lot of games that involve bartering without actually money, but just the setting up the whole business experience. There's so much we can do to just educate people, and it's never about the money. There are wealth addicts. That's a whole other topic on its own of what people do who are addicted to money. It's a matter of being comfortable with whatever aspect of money we have, however we're using money, to recognize money is a tool, much like a hammer. It can do damage if it breaks a window, and it can do a lot of good. And it's a matter of being trained in how to use that tool, becoming comfortable with it, so that we can use it to really leverage ourselves up.
Okay, Calista, I feel like maybe that's where we can do some tapping.
Okay.
You know, around that money is a tool, but oh, I've seen it be such a bad tool for so many people. And how that was one of the blocks that I thought of immediately early on when we were talking about coming into all this money, like the, uh-oh, what kind of a person am I if I have all of this money? But how it can be a tool for good, and it can be a tool to help you in your life, and it can help create some safety or some freedom for you and help you to help more people.
And the biggest point is, how do we have it do both? Create freedom and safety. And I think that's one of those things where people have it in this notion where, oh, I have to save, or I spend, as opposed to, I can do both. Mm-hmm. I can find a way to be wise with my money choices so that I am spending the amount that I need to spend and saving the amount that I need to spend, so that I am thinking about my money choices, not just for today, but into the future as well.
And in a way that feels good to you, like someone could win money and their 10% big spend would be the car. For you, you might care less about that, and it might be something completely different. And then for the person next to you, it'll be something different altogether again. So it's okay for it to be not what the Joneses have, but what you actually would really enjoy and feels meaningful.
And that's what's important about tapping, is to be clear on your values so that you're gaining that clarity about, how do I want to have my money choices be made? What's my comfort level? Not my advisor's comfort level, not my parents' comfort level, not my friend's comfort level, not keeping up with the
neighbors.
But what's comfortable for me? Making choices that are right for me. Maybe I want my child in a private school because they have special needs. It might not be right for somebody else, but I'm willing to forego things such as vacations so that I can have that choice. I have a friend, she packs lunch to work. She rarely goes for the coffee and things like that. She'll buy secondhand clothing regularly, but she's traveling. And her colleagues are like, how can you afford to travel? And she's looking through herself going, how can you afford to go for coffee every day? Because her values are her values. She chooses to travel. She wants to see the world.
Absolutely. Maria Nemeth wrote a book called The Energy of Money that maybe you've read. And she talks about that with some of the clients she works with around, oh, you want a vacation? Okay, well, oh, you're spending $5 at Starbucks or wherever your coffee shop is every day? Okay, yeah. Well, why don't we limit that to, you know, the Thursday mochaccino, and those other 4 days of the week goes into your vacation fund. And by the end of the year, this woman enjoyed like a really nice 5-star tropical holiday, which is what she wanted to do, was go away in the middle of the winter. And she did, just by not having that thing every day. And then I want to remind everyone of research I presented last year saying that if you don't indulge every day, you're actually happier with when you do have it. If you just save that and make it more of a treat, whether right. that is the coffee or wherever it is that is so easy for you to spend your money easily. And I'm so aware of that if I decide to splurge on something like a hot beverage. Yeah. Because I know I can feel in myself where it becomes less of a fun thing and just more of a, okay, I guess I'm driving by and it would be good, rather than it's something special. And then not only are you saving money and making yourself happier because you get to go on that vacation, or you're happier with your retirement savings or investment portfolio, whatever it is that you're doing with that saved money, but you're happier when you do enjoy that thing that you weren't having every single day.
I think the challenge is, can be comfortable with my money today and comfortable with my money in the future. So when I look back in hindsight on what I'm doing with my money today, will I feel good about it? As opposed to going, oh, shoot, there's some regret there. And this is why so much of it is tappable, because it's about me making choices that are right for me managing my money in a way that's right for me. It's not about me doing it your way or anyone else's way. It's what works for me.
Okay. So can we jump in and do a little bit of an exercise
yes.
on that?
Yes. All yes. Right. So let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. How true does it feel for you to say, I am in control of my finances?
Okay, and everyone who's listening, you're doing this along with us, right?
Of
How
course.
True does it feel? Like a 6? It could okay. be an 8, but it's somewhere in there.
Okay, so that's a good thing, right? That's on the upper end.
It's on the upper end.
Okay, no, which is great. How about I can make good financial decisions?
That feels strong.
Okay.
For me.
You've been doing a lot of work on this. Okay.
Well, I've hosted several summits and work with lots of people and tap on this all the time.
Of course. Okay. I make wise, but I mean, aside from you, just for the audience, okay,
absolutely.
I make good financial decisions. How true does that feel? You know, for you, it's strong. We'll give them a second to think about that. How about I can make wise financial decisions? Or I can successfully manage my money.
So. You know, what's interesting about that is, so what you can feel, I successfully manage my money. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there could be work to go on behind that. Because for instance, I feel good when I invest money in myself in learning.
Right.
I don't need a lot of new stuff in other ways, but I love to read or take courses, that sort of thing. And that feels good. But you can still get yourself into financial hot water by overinvesting in that sort of thing. Or like you hire a coach where it doesn't go well one time, stuff like
right.
that. So I can see where there's some, might be some blocks for all of these people listening out there.
Well, all of us have that bleed source. It may not be the cappuccinos. It's the fact that we are on Amazon buying new books every week, you know, whatever that bleed source is for us, right? And it's funny because you can save money on welfare if you're prudent. You can have a lifestyle that is beyond just by bartering, using the public library, those kinds of things, and really accessing the resources that are out there. One night a month, the museum or the art gallery might be free. Go on those nights so you can have a lot of cultural experience. The theaters often have pay what you can nights, or the back row bleed seats are discounted. So you can have a great lifestyle by being creative to find those resources. So let me go back to you. When you think of money management, mm-hmm. what's your hookup? What's your trigger?
I don't, the only thing that feels like my trigger or like my bleed would be information, because I love it so much.
So I know enough about money. How does that feel for you?
It feels like a 6, like I could know more. And everyone okay. listening, keep answering these questions as well. I'm just doing it to be the guinea pig.
Less than 20% of the population feel they are knowledgeable about finances. So you're at the above average.
But there's a ton I don't know, but I feel okay about not knowing it. That's all. And I know that I'll get there and that I'm getting there.
But you also have people in place, whether it's financial advisors or a team, so you know that you've got people around you that you trust who have the information. So when you delegate the task out, you can feel good about delegating that task out. And that's a whole other tappable issue as well, trusting the people that are part of our team. Okay. But how confident are you in achieving your financial goals and managing your finances?
I feel okay.
Okay. 8 out of 10 people do not. They lack confidence that they can achieve their financial goals. So this is where, for the audience, note these numbers down for yourself. How confident do you feel in managing these financial goals?
Okay. Because it's having that benchmark that we can start on so that when we check in 5 minutes, we can go, yeah, there's some movement here. There's some freedom around here. Okay.
Okay.
Shall we dive in?
Let's do it.
Okay. Tapping on the side of our hands.
Even though I resist changing my money habits.
I deeply and completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
I deeply and completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
Even though I like my comfort zone.
Even though I like my comfort zone.
It's familiar to me and keeps me safe.
It's familiar to me and keeps me safe.
I deeply and completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
I deeply and completely love, accept, and forgive myself.
Even though I've put up boundaries without realizing it.
Even though I've put up boundaries without realizing it.
And created a trap for myself.
And created a trap for myself.
My own little comfort zone.
My own little comfort zone.
I deeply and completely.
I deeply and completely.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Even though I do things to maintain my psychological safety.
Even though I do things to maintain my psychological safety.
Because sometimes safety is more important than the truth.
Because sometimes safety is more important than the truth.
I love and accept myself.
I love and accept myself.
And I forgive myself.
And I forgive myself.
For all the barriers.
For all the barriers.
And all my resistance.
And all my resistance.
Even though I have to change my comfort zone to change my money situation.
Even though I have to change my comfort zone to change my money situation.
I deeply and completely.
I deeply and completely.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Even though sometimes it's difficult to gain some traction with my finances.
Even though sometimes it's difficult to gain some traction with my finances.
I deeply and completely.
I deeply and completely.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Love, accept, and forgive myself.
Okay. So let's go through the points now, starting at the top of the head. And each pause, just move to the next spot. I'm not going to tell you where. Just, you know the
Keep
points.
Keep on moving. Yeah.
Exactly. Top of the head. Changing my boundaries.
Changing my boundaries.
I'm in control of my finances.
I'm in control of my finances.
I know where I stand financially.
I know where I stand financially.
I've done the math.
I've done the math.
I know the truth.
I know the truth.
The truth about my finances is important.
The truth about my finances is important.
It's safe to know the truth about my finances.
It's safe to know the truth about my finances.
It is safe to know the truth about my investments.
It's safe to know the truth about my investments.
I can change my comfort zone.
I can change my comfort zone.
I can change my money situation.
I can change my money situation.
I can manage my money differently.
I can manage my money differently.
I can manage it more effectively.
I can manage it more effectively.
I can manage my finances differently.
I can manage my finances differently.
I can do the math.
I can do the math.
I can do the calculations.
I can do the calculations.
I can manage my money well.
I can manage my money well.
I can manage my money wisely.
I can manage my money wisely.
I can manage my investments well.
I can manage my investments well.
I can make prudent investments.
I can make prudent investments.
I can be smart about how I spend my money.
I can be smart about how I spend my money.
I can learn new things about money management.
I can learn new things about money management.
I can become stronger.
I can become stronger.
I can educate myself.
I can educate myself.
I can make wise decisions.
I can make wise decisions.
It's safe to know more.
It's safe to know more.
It's safe to ask questions.
It's safe to ask questions.
I can be savvy with money.
I can be savvy with money.
I can gain some traction in my finances.
I can gain some traction in my finances.
I can be competent and confident with managing money.
I can be competent and confident with managing money.
I can be competent and confident with managing my investments.
I can be confident and competent with managing my investments.
I can be competent and confident working with advisors.
I can be competent and confident in working with advisors.
Accountants.
Accountants.
Lawyers.
Lawyers.
Financial planners.
Financial planners.
Estate planners.
Estate planners.
Real estate agents.
Real estate agents.
Whoever it is.
Whoever it is.
The guy fixing my toilet.
The guy fixing my toilet.
In my tenant's apartment.
In my tenant's apartment.
Whoever it is.
Whoever it is.
I can be comfortable.
I can be comfortable.
With all my advisors.
With all my advisors.
I can be comfortable.
I can be comfortable.
With my money team.
With my money team.
I can be comfortable.
I can be comfortable.
With all the people.
With all the people.
Who support me with my finances.
Who support me with my finances.
I can understand the math.
I can understand the math.
I can do the math.
I can do the math.
I can understand the process.
I can understand the process.
I can understand the strategy.
I can understand the strategy.
I can understand it all.
I can understand it all.
I can ask questions.
I can ask questions.
When I don't understand.
When I don't understand.
I can learn this.
I can learn this.
I can learn all of this.
I can learn all of this.
Little by little.
Little by little.
I can understand.
I can understand.
I can understand compound interest.
I can understand compound interest.
And all the formulas.
And all the formulas.
And do all the calculations.
And do all the calculations.
So I can leverage my finances.
So I can leverage my finances.
I can maximize my expenditures.
I can maximize my expenditures.
I can be open to wise suggestions.
I can be open to wise suggestions.
I can safely question the not so wise.
I can safely question the not so wise.
I can discriminate between fact and folly.
I can discriminate between fact and folly.
I can see the truth.
I can see the truth.
I can embrace the truth.
I can embrace the truth.
I can select investments that are right for me.
I can select investments that are right for me.
Whether it's putting more money in the bank.
Whether that's putting more money in the bank.
Or making financial purchases.
Or making financial purchases.
I can keep more of my money.
I can keep more of my money.
I can have more money in the bank.
I can have more money in the bank.
I can increase my savings.
I can increase my savings.
I can increase my investments.
I can increase my investments.
I can increase my net worth.
I can increase my net worth.
Maybe I can double my savings.
Maybe I can double my savings.
Doubling my savings.
Doubling my savings.
Doubling my net worth.
Doubling my net worth.
After I double it?
After I double it.
I can triple it.
I can triple it.
I can triple my net worth.
I can triple my net worth.
I can triple my savings.
I can triple my savings.
Always expanding.
Always expanding.
Expanding my investments.
Expanding my investments.
Creating a financial future that's solid for me.
Creating a financial future that's solid for me.
Wise money today.
Wise money today.
Wise money tomorrow.
Wise money tomorrow.
Solid money decisions today.
Solid money decisions today.
Provides freedom for tomorrow.
Provides freedom for tomorrow.
Doing this well.
Doing this well.
Managing my money well.
Managing my money well.
Managing it well today.
Managing it well today.
Managing it well tomorrow.
And managing it well tomorrow.
Take a deep breath. A sip of water.
So it was interesting in your tapping style was just that you did so many, even those at the beginning. So that was your stating the negative or the truths. Mm-hmm. And then having more the affirmative statements as we tap through the points. Was very interesting for me. I've not tapped like that before.
Everyone has a different format. Mm-hmm. Because of this type of format, it's like, I don't know what individuals, people's issues are. And, you know, for you, it's like you already have a good comfort level with being in control of your finances and making sound decisions. So it's a matter of, for one person in the audience, you know, these two will be making the mark. For someone else in the audience, something else will make the mark. So if we sort of do a shotgun approach, shall we say, that hopefully it'll kind of work for more people.
Totally.
And it's as always, go through it again, a second time, a third time. One of the things I do many people journal, and I'll write in the morning. I'll do my journaling in the morning. And then at the end of my journaling, as my mind wanders through that journaling process, it does whatever it does and goes wherever it goes. I'll come back to my journaling and then I'll chat my way through it. And I'll go, oh, I didn't know I had this issue before, whatever it is. Because we uncover new things, right?
And you know what I thought was interesting about that tapping as we were tapping on the affirmative statements is that we're going to get into different types of affirmations that do work later in this summit. I thought, boy, this is a really great way. If there's a line that Calista has said today or 10 lines that she said as you were tapping through and it felt really unbelievable, perfect. That is fodder right there for you to say, okay, this is an area I know I need to tap on, just like she's writing in her journal and then tapping as she's reading it, like, oh, there's a new issue that came up. If she's saying these things and it's like, nope, that's a no, that's a no, that's a no, great. Then you know you can go back and do some tapping, like, what's behind that? How do you feel when you think about that? I can do this. Feels like, no, it's never going to happen. I feel scared. It's overwhelming. Wonderful. There's a whole new area for you to explore and work on. So thanks for that.
Oh, you're welcome. And I can't stress the idea of going back and tapping on issues that you think are not your issues. I know you and I have talked about this before, you know, listening to an audio on debt. And I'm thinking to myself going, I don't really have any debt issues. And I thought, well, it's playing. Let me go along anyways. And I did have debt issues once upon a time. And as I was working my way through, we're addressing the issues around shame and embarrassment and things. I'm going, oh my gosh, although I've been financially in the black now for 10 years, I'm still carrying shame issues from being in debt ages ago. And it's a matter of recognizing that you might think tangibly, oh, I've got this in the bag, my investments are going well, whatever it is. And this is where, okay, but can I double my investments? Can I triple my investments? Or maybe it's not so much how am I managing my money personally, but am I dealing with it with my spouse or with my mate? Are we on board with managing finances? Are we talking about it? Or am I preparing my children or my heirs for what's coming for them? So it's a matter of taking your financial management to the next level, whatever that next level is.
So as we're rounding out following the lovely tapping, is there kind of a last minute or a last piece of advice that you have for everyone regarding having more money in their lives, whether they have it now or not? Just how to have more money in your lives and feel good about it.
Tap on what you have. If you feel good about what you, I mean, I'm echoing what everyone else is saying every day of the summit, but the idea being is whatever you've got, be appreciative of what you have, be aware of what you're doing, do the math when you're, and it's whether it's a simple little thing of comparison shopping at the grocery store, you know, just to say, hey, do I really need this? Thinking twice about that purchase that we don't throw out food that we don't need and waste. But it's just being comfortable with taking those extra 3 seconds here and there to kind of compare, you know, to take the extra 5 seconds to check our stock portfolio for the day. Whatever it is, it's just taking the time. Money is your relationship that you'll have from birth until death. Our children come and go, our spouses, mates, friends, you know, they don't live with us on a daily basis like our relationship to money. So it's important about creating a powerful relationship to that money component, because that is the one relationship that will be with us no matter what.
Thank you so much for joining us on the summit this year and for all the really interesting value that you brought.
Thank you, Jen, for having me. I appreciate it.
So everyone, how are you feeling after that interview? Did you tap through it? Are you feeling like maybe you are open to learning more about investments? Even if you're someone who's friendly with investments in the first place, do you feel like that challenge she gave at the end of, okay, am I ready to double it? Or if the idea of investments made you want to fall asleep or run out of the room at the beginning, do you feel a little bit more even like, whew, okay, I know what work I need to do, or maybe I can think about it or read about it just for 2 minutes a week? Something small like that, just what is safe and comfortable for you, right? This whole thing was about money comfort. And I so appreciated when she was saying, it doesn't matter where you are on the scale of wealth, managing it now and feeling comfortable with what you have right now is the step toward having more and having more. The other thing I wanted to point out, having listened to this interview again, editing it, was that those really interesting questions she asked before we got into the tapping, I would not have had such a great feeling with those, maybe 4, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I would not have felt that way, even a year or 2 years ago. So continually exposing myself to this and doing the work has made a really big difference. So the work that you are doing right now inside of this summit, last year, if you joined us inside of that summit, and what you do the other 50 weeks of the year, that matters, and that can help you become more comfortable with money to bring more into your life. This summit is about changing our inside so that we can create a new world outside. And one of the ways that we are achieving that is not just doing the personal work inside of the interviews, but also by partnering with our charity, which this year is Create Global Healing. Now, if you haven't had a chance to watch the video that I did with the head of that charity, Lori Layden, feel free to pop to moneymindsetsummit.com. And right there on the homepage is that beautiful interview that I did with Lori, where she talks about her really gorgeous charity. Now, the charity is that she travels around the world helping children in who have just experienced trauma. So she was in Rwanda, she was in Connecticut when the Sandy Hook shootings happened, and right now she's still working with Parkland students. And part of their mission statement is that they're there to provide not just trauma healing, but heart-centered leadership and economic sustainability support. And she talks about the beautiful things that have happened with the people she's worked with in years past. And part of their mission statement says, "We believe that global healing will take place through compassionate, heart-centered experiences that foster the understanding that we are all connected as global citizens desiring the same things: to love and be loved, to live a meaningful life, and to have a bright, peaceful future." Adam Grant, who is an organizational psychologist, he did a ton of research and then published an entire book called Give and Take on why people who give more tend to be more successful. And I wanted to read you this quote of his since it matches so well. He says, "This is what I find most magnetic about successful givers. They get to the top without cutting others down, finding ways of expanding the pie that benefit themselves and the people around them. Whereas success is zero sum in a group of takers, in groups of givers, it may be true that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts." So let's expand that pie. Let's get the gifts from all of our summit donors. Let's pay for the recordings of the charity, which will be available at the end of the summit. And then as we are improving ourselves, we are expanding the pie and helping people all around the globe. So to be part of this, pop over to moneymindsetsummit.com/donate to make your donation, to listen to this summit again, and to help heal the planet at the same time that you're healing you and your money life.